and getting up, he put on a pair of slippers because of the dampness of the floor, and without throwing a dressing gown or anything of the kind over him, he rushed out of the door of his room, just in time to see approaching along a corridor a band of more than 20 persons with lighted torches and naked swords in their hands, all shouting out, "To arms! To arms, Senor Governor, to arms! The enemy is in the island in countless numbers, and we are lost unless your skill and valour come to our support." Keeping up this noise, tumult, and uproar, they came to where Sancho stood dazed and bewildered by what he saw and heard, and as they approached, one of them called out to him, "Arm at once, your lordship, if you would not have yourself destroyed and the whole island lost." "What have I to do with arming?" said Sancho. "What do I know about arms or supports? Better leave all that to my master Don Quixote, who will settle it and make all safe in a trice, for I, sinner that I am, God help me, don't understand these scuffles." "Ah, Senor Governor," said another, "what slackness of mettle is this? Arm yourself. Here are arms for you, offensive and defensive. Come out to the plaza and be our leader and captain. It falls upon you by right, for you are our governor." "Arm me, then, in God's name," said Sancho. And they at once produced two large shields they had come provided with, and placed them upon him over his shirt without letting him put on anything else, one shield in front and the other behind. And passing his arms through the openings they had made, they bound him tight with ropes, so that there he was, walled and boarded up, as straight as a spindle and unable to bend his knees or stir a single step. In his hand they placed a lance, on which he leant to keep himself from falling, and as soon as they had him thus fixed, they bade him march forward and lead them on and give them all courage, for with him for their guide and lamp and morning star, they were sure to bring their business to a successful issue. "How am I to march, unlucky being that I am," said Sancho, "when I can't stir my kneecaps, for these boards I have bound so tight to my body won't let me? What you must do is carry me in your arms and lay me across or set me upright in some postern, and I'll hold it either with this lance or with my body." "On, Senor Governor," cried another, "it is fear more than the boards that keeps you from moving. Make haste, stir yourself, for there is no time to lose. The enemy is increasing in numbers, the shouts grow louder, and the danger is pressing." Urged by these exhortations and reproaches, the poor governor made an attempt to advance, but fell to the ground with such a crash that he fancied he had broken himself all to pieces. There he lay like a tortoise enclosed in its shell, or a side of bacon between two boards, or a boat bottom up on the beach. Nor did the gang of jokers feel any compassion for him when they saw him down. So far from that, that extinguishing their torches, they began to shout afresh, and to renew the calls to arms with such energy, trampling on poor Sancho and slashing at him over the shield with their swords in such a way that, if he had not gathered himself together and made himself small and drawn in his head between the shields, it would have fared badly with the poor governor, as, squeezed into that narrow compass, he lay sweating and sweating again, and commending himself with all his heart to God to deliver him from his present peril. Some stumbled over him, others fell upon him, and one there was who took up a position on top of him for some time, and from thence, as if from a watchtower, issued orders to the troops, shouting out, "Here, our side! Here the enemy is thickest! Hold the breach there! Shut that gate! Barricade those ladders! Here with your stink-pots of pitch and resin and kettles of boiling oil! Block the streets with feather beds!" In short, in his ardour he mentioned every little thing and every implement and engine of war by means of which an assault upon a city is warded off, while the bruised and battered Sancho, who heard and suffered all, was saying to himself, "Oh, if it would only please the Lord to let the island be lost at once, and I could see myself either dead or out of this torture!" Heaven heard his prayer, and when he least expected it, he heard voices exclaiming, "Victory! Victory! The enemy retreats beaten! Come, Senor Governor, get up, and come and enjoy the victory, and divide the spoils that have been won from the foe by the might of that invincible arm!" "Lift me up," said the wretched Sancho in a woe-begone voice. They helped him to rise, and as soon as he was on his feet, said, "The enemy I have beaten you may nail to my forehead. I don't want to divide the spoils of the foe. I only beg and entreat some friend, if I have one, to give me a sup of wine, for I'm parched with thirst, and wipe me dry, for I'm turning to water." They rubbed him down, fetched him wine, and unbound the shields, and he seated himself upon his bed, and with fear, agitation, and fatigue, he fainted away. Those who had been concerned in the joke were now sorry they had pushed it so far. However, the anxiety his fainting away had caused them was relieved by his returning to himself. He asked what o'clock it was. They told him it was just daybreak. He said no more, and in silence began to dress himself while all watched him, waiting to see what the haste with which he was putting on his clothes meant. He got himself dressed at last, and then, slowly, for he was sorely bruised and could not go fast, he proceeded to the stable, followed by all who were present, and going up to Dapple embraced him and gave him a loving kiss on the forehead, and said to him, not without tears in his eyes, "Come along, comrade and friend and partner of my toils and sorrows. When I was with you and had no cares to trouble me except mending your harness and feeding your little carcass, happy were my hours, my days, and my years. But since I left you and mounted the towers of ambition and pride, 1,000 miseries, 1,000 troubles, and 4,000 anxieties have entered into my soul." And all the while he was speaking in this strain, he was fixing the pack-saddle on the ass, without a word from anyone. Then, having Dapple saddled, he, with great pain and difficulty, got up on him, and addressing himself to the major-domo, the secretary, the head-carver, and Pedro Recio the doctor, and several others who stood by, he said, "Make way, gentlemen, and let me go back to my old freedom. Let me go look for my past life, and raise myself up from this present death. I was not born to be a governor, or protect islands or cities from the enemies that choose to attack them. Ploughing and digging, vine-dressing and pruning are more in my way than defending provinces or kingdoms. St. Peter is very well at Rome. I mean, each of us is best following the trade he was born to. A reaping-hook fits my hand better than a governor's sceptre. I'd rather have my fill of gazpacho than be subject to the misery of a meddling doctor who starves me with hunger, and I'd rather lie in summer under the shade of an oak and in winter wrap myself in a double sheepskin jacket in freedom, and go to bed between holland sheets and dress in sables under the restraint of a government. God be with your worships, and tell my lord the duke that, naked I was born, naked I find myself, I neither lose nor gain. I mean that without a farthing I came into this government, and without a farthing I go out of it, very different from the way governors commonly leave other islands. Stand aside and let me go. I have to plaster myself, for I believe every one of my ribs is crushed, thanks to the enemies that have been trampling over me tonight."
"That is unnecessary, Señor Governor," said Dr. Recio, "for I will give your worship a draught against falls and bruises that will soon make you as sound and strong as ever. And as for your diet, I promise your worship to behave better, and let you eat plentifully of whatever you like."
"You spoke late," said Sancho. "I'd as soon turn Turk as stay any longer. Those jokes won't pass a second time. By God, I'd as soon remain in this government or take another, even if it was offered me between two plates, as fly to heaven without wings. I am of the breed of the Panzers, and they are every one of them obstinate. And if they once say odds, odds it must be, no matter if it is evens, in spite of all the world. Here in this stable I leave the ants' wings that lifted me up into the air for the swifts and other birds to eat me, and let's take to level ground and our feet once more. And if they're not shod in pinked shoes of cordovan leather, they won't want for rough sandals of hemp. Every ewe to her like, and let no one stretch his leg beyond the length of the sheet. And now let me pass, for it's growing late with me."
To this the major-domo said,
"Señor Governor, we would let your worship go with all our hearts, though it sorely grieves us to lose you, for your wit and Christian conduct naturally make us regret you. But it is well known that every governor, before he leaves the place where he has been governing, is bound, first of all, to render an account. Let your worship do so for the 10 days you have held the government, and then you may go, and the peace of God go with you."
"No one can demand it of me," said Sancho, "but he whom my lord the duke shall appoint. I am going to meet him, and to him I will render an exact one. Besides, when I go forth naked as I do, there's no other proof needed to show that I have governed like an angel."
"By God, the great Sancho is right," said Dr. Recio, "and we should let him go, for the duke will be beyond measure glad to see him."
They all agreed to this, and allowed him to go, first offering to bear him company and furnish him with all he wanted for his own comfort or for the journey. Sancho said he did not want anything more than a little barley for Dapple, and half a cheese and half a loaf for himself. For the distance being so short, there was no occasion for any better or bulkier provant. They all embraced him, and he with tears embraced all of them, and left them filled with admiration not only at his remarks, but at his firm and sensible resolution. Chapter 54, which deals with matters relating to this history and no other. The Duke and Duchess resolved that the challenge Don Quixote had, for the reason already mentioned, given their vassal, should be proceeded with, and as the young man was in Flanders, whither he had fled to escape, having Doña Rodriguez for a mother-in-law, they arranged to substitute for him a Gascon lackey named Tosilos, first of all carefully instructing him in all he had to do. 2 days later the Duke told Don Quixote that in 4 days from that time his opponent would present himself on the field of battle armed as a knight, and would maintain that the damsel lied by half a beard, nay, a whole beard, if she affirmed that he had given her a promise of marriage. Don Quixote was greatly pleased at the news, and promised himself to do wonders in the lists, and reckoned it rare good fortune that an opportunity should have offered for letting his noble hosts see what the might of his strong arm was capable of. And so in high spirits and satisfaction he awaited the expiration of the 4 days, which, measured by his impatience, seemed spinning themselves out into 400 ages. Let us leave them to pass, as we do other things, and go and bear Sancho company, as mounted on Dapple, half glad, half sad, he paced along on his road to join his master, in whose society he was happier than in being governor of all the islands in the world. It so happened that before he had gone a great way from the island of his government, and whether it was an island, city, town, or village that he governed, he never troubled himself to inquire, he saw coming along the road he was travelling 6 pilgrims with staves, foreigners of that sort that beg for alms, singing, who, as they drew near, arranged themselves in a line, and lifting up their voices all together, began to sing in their own language, something that Sancho could not understand, with the exception of one word which sounded plainly, alms, from which he gathered that it was alms they asked for in their song. And being, as Cide Hamete says, remarkably charitable, he took out of his saddle-bags the half-loaf and half-cheese he had been provided with, and gave them to them, explaining to them by signs that he had nothing else to give them. They received them very gladly, but exclaimed, "Gelt! Gelt!" "I don't understand what you want of me, good people," said Sancho. On this, one of them took a purse out of his bosom and showed it to Sancho, by which he comprehended they were asking for money. And putting his thumb to his throat and spreading his hand upwards, he gave them to understand that he had not the sign of a coin about him, and urging Dapple forward, he broke through them. But as he was passing, one of them, who had been examining him very closely, rushed towards him, and flinging his arms round him, exclaimed in a loud voice and good Spanish, "God bless me! What's this I see? Is it possible that I hold in my arms my dear friend, my good neighbor, Sancho Panza? But there's no doubt about it, for I'm not asleep, nor am I drunk just now." Sancho was surprised to hear himself called by his name, and find himself embraced by a foreign pilgrim, and after regarding him steadily without speaking, he was still unable to recognize him. But the pilgrim, perceiving his perplexity, cried, "What? And is it possible, Sancho Panza, that thou dost not know thy neighbour Ricote, the Moorish shopkeeper of thy village?" Sancho, upon this, looking at him more carefully, began to recall his features, and at last recognized him perfectly, and without getting off the ass, threw his arms round his neck, saying, "Who the devil could have known thee, Ricote, in this mummer's dress thou art in? Tell me, who has Frenchified thee, and how dost thou dare to return to Spain, where if they catch thee and recognize thee, it will go hard enough with thee?"
"If thou dost not betray me, Sancho," said the pilgrim, "I am safe, for in this dress no one will recognize me. But let us turn aside out of the road into that grove there, where my comrades are going to eat and rest, and thou shalt eat with them there, for they are very good fellows. I'll have time enough to tell thee then all that has happened to me since I left our village, in obedience to His Majesty's edict that threatened such severities against the unfortunate people of my nation, as thou hast heard."
Sancho complied, and Ricote, having spoken to the other pilgrims, they withdrew to the grove they saw, turning a considerable distance out of the road. They threw down their staves, took off their pilgrims' cloaks, and remained in their underclothing. They were all good-looking young fellows, except Ricote, who was a man somewhat advanced in years. They carried saddle-bags, all of them, and all apparently well filled, at least with things provocative of thirst, such as would summon it from 2 leagues off. They stretched themselves on the ground, and making a tablecloth of the grass, they spread upon it bread, salt, knives, walnut, scraps of cheese, and well-picked ham bones, which, if they were past gnawing, were not past sucking. They also put down a black dainty called, they say, caviar, and made of the eggs of fish, a great thirst-wakener. Nor was there any lack of olives, dry, it is true, and without any seasoning, but for all that toothsome and pleasant. But what made the best show in the field of the banquet was half a dozen wineskins, for each of them produced his own from his saddlebag. Even the good Ricote, who from a Spanish Moor had transformed himself into a German or Dutchman, took out his, which in size might have vied with the five others. They then began to eat with very great relish and very leisurely, making the most of each morsel, very small ones of everything, they took up on the point of the knife. And then, all at the same moment, raised their arms and skins aloft, the mouths placed in their mouths, and all eyes fixed on heaven, just as if they were taking aim at it. And in this attitude they remained ever so long, wagging their heads from side to side as if in acknowledgment of the pleasure they were enjoying, while they decanted the bowels of the wineskins into their own stomachs. Sancho beheld all, and nothing gave him pain. So far from that, acting on the proverb he knew so well, "When thou art at Rome, do as thou seest," he asked Ricote for his wineskin, and took aim like the rest of them, and with not less enjoyment. Four times did the wineskins bear being uplifted, but the fifth it was all in vain, for they were drier and more sapless than a rush by that time, which made the jollity that had been kept up so far begin to flag. Every now and then, some one of them would grasp Sancho's right hand in his own, saying,
"Espagnoli und Tedeschi, alles uno, gutes compagno."
And Sancho would answer,
"Gutes compagno, i' faith,"
and then go off into a fit of laughter that lasted an hour, without a thought for the moment of anything that had befallen him in his government. For cares have very little sway over us while we are eating and drinking. At length, the wine having come to an end with them, drowsiness began to come over them, and they dropped asleep on their very table and tablecloth. Ricote and Sancho alone remained awake, for they had eaten more and drunk less, and Ricote, drawing Sancho aside, they seated themselves at the foot of a beach, leaving the pilgrims buried in a sweet sleep. And without once falling into his own Morisco tongue, Ricote spoke as follows in pure Castilian.
"Thou knowest well, neighbour and friend Sancho Panza, how the proclamation or edict his Majesty commanded to be issued against those of my nation filled us all with terror and dismay. Well, me at least it did, insomuch that I think before the time granted us for quitting Spain was out, the full force of the penalty had already fallen upon me and upon my children. I decided then, and I think wisely, and just like one who knows that at a certain date the house he lives in will be taken from him, and looks out beforehand for another to change into, I decided, I say, to leave the town myself, alone and without my family, and go to seek out some place to remove them to comfortably, and not in the hurried way in which the others took their departure. For I saw very plainly, and so did all the older men among us, that the proclamations were not mere threats, as some said, but positive enactments which would be enforced at the appointed time. And what made me believe this was what I knew of the base and extravagant designs which our people harbored. Designs of such a nature that I think it was a divine inspiration that moved His Majesty to carry out a resolution so spirited. Not that we were all guilty, for some there were true and steadfast Christians, but they were so few that they could make no head against those who were not, and it was not prudent to cherish a viper in the bosom by having enemies in the house. In short, it was with just cause that we were visited with the penalty of banishment, a mild and lenient one in the eyes of some, but to us the most terrible that could be inflicted upon us. Wherever we are, we weep for Spain, for after all we were born there, and it is our natural fatherland. Nowhere do we find the reception our unhappy condition needs, and in Barbary and all the parts of Africa where we counted upon being received, succored and welcomed, it is there they insult and ill-treat us most. We knew not our good fortune until we lost it. Such is the longing we almost all of us have to return to Spain, that most of those who, like myself, know the language, and there are many who do, come back to it and leave their wives and children forsaken yonder, so great is their love for it. And now I know by experience the meaning of the saying, 'Sweet is the love of one's country.' I left our village, as I said, and went to France. But though they gave us a kind reception there, I was anxious to see all I could. I crossed into Italy and reached Germany, and there it seemed to me we might live with more freedom, as the inhabitants do not pay any attention to trifling points. Everyone lives as he likes, for in most parts they enjoy liberty of conscience. I took a house in a town near Augsburg, and there joined these pilgrims, who are in the habit of coming to Spain in great numbers every year to visit the shrines there, which they look upon as their Indies, and a sure and certain source of gain. They travel nearly all over it, and there is no town out of which they do not go full up of meat and drink, as the saying is, and with a real at least in money. And they come off at the end of their travels with more than 100 crowns saved, which, changed into gold, they smuggle out of the kingdom, either in the hollow of their staves or in the patches of their pilgrims' cloaks or by some device of their own, and carry to their own country in spite of the guards at the posts and passes where they are searched. Now, my purpose is, Sancho, to carry away the treasure that I left buried, which, as it is outside the town, I shall be able to do without risk, and to write, or cross over from Valencia, to my daughter and wife, who I know are at Algiers, and find some means of bringing them to some French port, and thence to Germany, there to await what it may be God's will to do with us. For after all, Sancho, I know well that Ricotta, my daughter, and Francisca Ricotta, my wife, are Catholic Christians, and though I am not so much so, still I am more of a Christian than a Moor, and it is always my prayer to God that he will open the eyes of my understanding, and show me how I am to serve him. But what amazes me, and I cannot understand, is why my wife and daughter should have gone to Barbary rather than to France, where they could live as Christians. To this Sancho replied, "Remember, Ricote, that may not have been open to them, for Juan Tiopieo, thy wife's brother, took them, and being a true Moor, he went where he could go most easily. And another thing I can tell thee, it is my belief thou art going in vain to look for what thou hast left buried, for we heard they took from thy brother-in-law and thy wife a great quantity of pearls and money and gold, which was never registered nor buried."
"That may be," said Ricote, "but I know they did not touch my hoard, for I did not tell them where it was, for fear of accidents. And so, if thou wilt come with me, Sancho, and help me to take it away and conceal it, I will give thee 200 crowns, wherewith thou mayest relieve thy necessities, and as thou knowest, I know they are many."
"I would do it," said Sancho, "but I am not at all covetous, for I gave up an office this morning in which, if I was, I might have made the walls of my house of gold and dined off silver plates before 6 months were over. And so for this reason, and because I feel I would be guilty of treason to my king if I helped his enemies, I would not go with thee if instead of promising me 200 crowns, thou wert to give me 400 here in hand."
"And what office is this thou hast given up, Sancho?" asked Ricote.
"I have given up being governor of an island," said Sancho, "and such a one, faith, as you won't find the like of easily."
"And where is this island?" said Ricote.
"Where?" said Sancho. 2 leagues from here, and it is called the Island of Barataria."
"Nonsense, Sancho," said Ricote. "Islands are away out in the sea. There are no islands on the mainland."
"What? No islands?" said Sancho. "I tell thee, friend Ricote, I left it this morning, and yesterday I was governing there as I pleased, like a Sagittarius. But for all that I gave it up, for it seemed to me a dangerous office, a governor's."
"And what hast thou gained by the government?" asked Ricote.
"I have gained," said Sancho, "the knowledge that I am no good for governing, unless it is a drove of cattle, and that the riches that are to be got by these governments are got at the cost of one's rest and sleep, aye, and even one's food. For in islands, the governors must eat little, especially if they have doctors to look after their health."
"I don't understand thee, Sancho," said Ricote. "But it seems to me all nonsense thou art talking. Who would give thee islands to govern? Is there any scarcity in the world of cleverer men than thou art for governors? Hold thy peace, Sancho, and come back to thy senses, and consider whether thou wilt come with me, as I said, to help me to take away treasure I left buried, for indeed it may be called a treasure, it is so large, and I will give thee wherewithal to keep thee, as I told thee."
"And I have told thee already, Ricote, that I will not," said Sancho. "Let it content thee that by me thou shalt not be betrayed, and go thy way in God's name, and let me go mine. For I know that well-gotten gain may be lost, but ill-gotten gain is lost, itself and its owner likewise."
"I will not press thee, Sancho,"
said Ricote.
"But tell me, wert thou in our village when my wife and daughter and brother-in-law left it?"
"I was so," said Sancho, "and I can tell thee thy daughter left it looking so lovely that all the village turned out to see her, and everybody said she was the fairest creature in the world. She wept as she went, and embraced all her friends and acquaintances and those who came out to see her, and she begged them all to commend her to God and Our Lady his mother, and this in such a touching way that it made me weep myself, though I'm not much given to tears, commonly. And faith, many a one would have liked to hide her or go out and carry her off on the road, but the fear of going against the king's command kept them back. The one who showed himself most moved was Don Pedro Gregorio, the rich young heir thou knowest of, and they say he was deep in love with her, and since she left he has not been seen in our village again, and we all suspect he has gone after her to steal her away, but so far nothing has been heard of it."
"I always had a suspicion that gentleman had a passion for my daughter," said Ricote. "But as I felt sure of my Ricotta's virtue, it gave me no uneasiness to know that he loved her. For thou must have heard it said, Sancho, that the Morisco women seldom or never engage in amours with the old Christians. And my daughter, who I fancy thought more of being a Christian than of love-making, would not trouble herself about the attentions of this heir."
"God grant it," said Sancho, "for it would be a bad business for both of them. But now let me be off, friend Ricote, for I want to reach where my master Don Quixote is tonight."
"God be with thee, brother Sancho," said Ricote. "My comrades are beginning to stir, and it is time, too, for us to continue our journey."
And then they both embraced, and Sancho mounted Dapple, and Ricote leant upon his staff, and so they parted. Chapter 55 Of What Befell Sancho on the Road, and Other Things That Cannot Be Surpassed. The length of time he delayed with Ricote prevented Sancho from reaching the duke's castle that day, though he was within half a league of it when night, somewhat dark and cloudy, overtook him. This, however, as it was summertime, did not give him much uneasiness, and he turned aside out of the road intending to wait for morning. But his ill luck and hard fate so willed it that as he was searching about for a place to make himself as comfortable as possible, he and Dapple fell into a deep, dark hole that lay among some very old buildings. As he fell, he commended himself with all his heart to God, fancying he was not going to stop until he reached the depths of the bottomless pit. But it did not turn out so, for at little more than thrice a man's height, Dapple touched bottom, and he found himself sitting on him without having received any hurt or damage whatever. He felt himself all over, and held his breath to try whether he was quite sound or had a hole made in him anywhere. And finding himself all right and whole and in perfect health, he was profuse in his thanks to God our Lord for the mercy that had been shown him, for he was sure he had been broken into 1,000 pieces. He also felt all along the sides of the pit with his hands to see if it were possible to get out of it without help, but he found they were quite smooth and afforded no hold anywhere, at which he was greatly distressed, especially when he heard how pathetically and dolefully Dapple was bemoaning himself, and no wonder he complained, nor was it from ill temper, for in truth he was not in a very good case.
"Alas," said Sancho, "what unexpected accidents happen at every step to those who live in this miserable world! Who would have said that one who saw himself yesterday sitting on a throne, governor of an island, giving orders to his servants and his vassals, would see himself today buried in a pit without a soul to help him, or servant or vassal to come to his relief? Here must we perish with hunger, my ass and myself, if indeed we don't die first, he of his bruises and injuries, I of grief and sorrow. At any rate, I'll not be as lucky as my master Don Quixote of La Mancha, when he went down into the cave of that enchanted Montesinos, where he found people to make more of him than if he had been in his own house. For it seems he came in for a table laid out and a bed ready-made. There he saw fair and pleasant visions, but here I'll see, I imagine, toads and adders. Unlucky wretch that I am! What an end my follies and fancies have come to! They'll take up my bones out of this when it's heaven's will that I'm found, picked clean, white, and polished, and my good Dapple's with them. And by that, perhaps, it will be found out who we are, at least by such as have heard that Sancho Panza never separated from his ass, nor his ass from Sancho Panza. Unlucky wretches, I say again, that our hard fate should not let us die in our own country and among our own people, where if there was no help for our misfortune, at any rate there would be someone to grieve for it and to close our eyes as we passed away. Oh, comrade and friend, how well have I repaid thy faithful services! Forgive me, and entreat fortune as well as thou canst to deliver us out of this miserable strait we are both in. And I promise to put a crown of laurel on thy head, and make thee look like a poet laureate, and give thee double feeds."
In this strain did Sancho bewail himself, and his ass listened to him, but answered him never a word. Such was the distress and anguish the poor beast found himself in. At length, after a night spent in bitter moanings and lamentations, day came, and by its light Sancho perceived that it was wholly impossible to escape out of that pit without help, and he fell to bemoaning his fate and uttering loud shouts to find out if there was anyone within hearing. But all his shouting was only crying in the wilderness, for there was not a soul anywhere in the neighbourhood to hear him. And then at last he gave himself up for dead. Dapple was lying on his back, and Sancho helped him to his feet, which he was scarcely able to keep. And then, taking a piece of bread out of his saddle-bag, which had shared their fortunes in the fall, he gave it to the ass, to whom it was not unwelcome, saying to him, as if he understood him, "With bread all sorrows are less." And now he perceived on one side of the pit a hole large enough to admit a person if he stooped and squeezed himself into a small compass. Sancho made for it, and entered it by creeping, and found it wide and spacious on the inside, which he was able to see, as a ray of sunlight that penetrated what might be called the roof showed it all plainly. He observed, too, that it opened and widened out into another spacious cavity, seeing which he made his way back to where the ass was, and with a stone began to pick away the clay from the hole, until in a short time he had made room for the beast to pass easily, and this accomplished, taking him by the halter, he proceeded to traverse the cavern to see if there was any outlet at the other end. He advanced, sometimes in the dark, sometimes without light, but never without fear.
"God Almighty help me," said he to himself, "this that is a misadventure to me would make a good adventure for my master Don Quixote. He would have been sure to take these depths and dungeons for flowery gardens or the palaces of Galiana, and would have counted upon issuing out of this darkness and imprisonment into some blooming meadow. But I, unlucky that I am, hopeless and spiritless, expect at every step another pit deeper than the first to open under my feet and swallow me up for good. Welcome, evil, if thou comest alone."
In this way, and with these reflections, he seemed to himself to have travelled rather more than half a league, when at last he perceived a dim light that looked like daylight, and found its way in on one side, showing that this road, which appeared to him the road to the other world, led to some opening. Here Cide Hamete leaves him, and returns to Don Quixote, who, in high spirits and satisfaction, was looking forward to the day fixed for the battle he was to fight with him who had robbed Doña Rodriguez's daughter of her honour, for whom he hoped to obtain satisfaction for the wrong and injury shamefully done to her. It came to pass, then, that having sallied forth one morning to practice and exercise himself in what he would have to do in the encounter he expected to find himself engaged in the next day, as he was putting Rocinante through his paces, or pressing him to the charge, he brought his feet so close to a pit that but for reining him in tightly it would have been impossible for him to avoid falling into it. He pulled him up, however, without a fall, and coming a little closer, examined the hole without dismounting. But as he was looking at it, he heard loud cries proceeding from it, and by listening attentively was able to make out that he who uttered them was saying,
"Ho, above there! Is there any Christian that hears me, or any charitable gentleman that will take pity on a sinner buried alive, on an unfortunate, disgoverned governor?"
It struck Don Quixote that it was the voice of Sancho Panza he heard, whereat he was taken aback and amazed, and raising his own voice as much as he could, he cried out,
"Who is below there? Who is that complaining?"
"Who should be here, or who should complain," was the answer, "but the forlorn Sancho Panza, for his sins and for his ill luck, governor of the island of Barataria, squire that was to the famous knight Don Quixote of La Mancha."
When Don Quixote heard this, his amazement was redoubled, and his perturbation grew greater than ever, for it suggested itself to his mind that Sancho must be dead, and that his soul was in torment down there. And carried away by this idea, he exclaimed,
"I conjure thee by everything that as a Catholic Christian I can conjure thee by, tell me who thou art. And if thou art a soul in torment, tell me what thou wouldst have me do for thee, for as my profession is to give aid and succour to those that need it in this world, it will also extend to aiding and succouring the distressed of the other who cannot help themselves."
"In that case," answered the voice, "your worship who speaks to me must be my master Don Quixote of La Mancha, Nay, from the tone of the voice, it is plain it can be nobody else.
Don Quixote I am, replied Don Quixote, he whose profession it is to aid and succour the living and the dead in their necessities. Wherefore tell me who thou art, for thou art keeping me in suspense. For if thou art my squire Sancho Panza and art dead, since the devils have not carried thee off, and thou art by God's mercy in purgatory, our holy mother the Roman Catholic Church has intercessory means sufficient to release thee from the pains thou art in, and I, for my part, will plead with her to that end, so far as my substance will go. Without further delay, therefore, declare thyself, and tell me who thou art.
By all that's good, was the answer, and by the birth of whomsoever your worship chooses, I swear, Señor Don Quixote of La Mancha, that I am your squire Sancho Panza, and that I have never died all my life, but that, having given up my government for reasons that would require more time to explain, I fell last night into this pit where I am now, and Dapple is witness and won't let me lie, for more by token he is here with me. Nor was this all. One would have fancied the ass understood what Sancho said, because that moment he began to bray so loudly that the whole cave rang again.
"Famous testimony!" exclaimed Don Quixote. "I know that bray as well as if I was its mother, and thy voice too, my Sancho. Wait, while I go to the Duke's castle, which is close by, and I will bring someone to take thee out of this pit into which thy sins no doubt have brought thee."
"Go, your worship," said Sancho, "and come back quick for God's sake, for I cannot bear being buried alive any longer, and I'm dying of fear."
Don Quixote left him and hastened to the castle to tell the Duke and Duchess what had happened to Sancho, and they were not a little astonished at it. They could easily understand his having fallen from the confirmatory circumstance of the cave which had been in existence there from time immemorial, but they could not imagine how he had quitted the government without their receiving any intimation of his coming. To be brief, they fetched ropes and tackle, as the saying is, and by dint of many hands and much labour, they drew up Dapple and Sancho Panza out of the darkness into the light of day. A student who saw him remarked,
"That's the way all bad governors should come out of their governments, as this sinner comes out of the depths of the pit, dead with hunger, pale, and, I suppose, without a farthing."
Sancho overheard him and said, "It is 8 or 10 days, brother Growler, since I entered upon the government of the island they gave me, and all that time I never had a bellyful of victuals, no, not for an hour. Doctors persecuted me and enemies crushed my bones, nor had I any opportunity of taking bribes or levying taxes. And if that be the case, as it is, I don't deserve, I think, to come out in this fashion. But a man proposes, and God disposes, and God knows what is best and what suits each one best. And as the occasion, so the behaviour. And let nobody say I won't drink of this water, and where one thinks there are flitches, there may be no pegs. God knows my meaning, and that's enough. I say no more, though I could."
"Be not angry or annoyed at what thou hearest, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "or there will never be an end of it. Keep a safe conscience and let them say what they like, for trying to stop slanderous tongues is like trying to put gates to the open plain. If a governor comes out of his government rich, they say he has been a thief, and if he comes out poor, that he has been a noodle and a blockhead."
"They'll be pretty sure this time," said Sancho, "to set me down for a fool rather than a thief."
Thus talking, and surrounded by boys and a crowd of people, they reached the castle, where in one of the corridors the Duke and Duchess stood waiting for them. But Sancho would not go up to see the Duke until he had first put Dapple in the stable, for he said he had passed a very bad night in his last quarters. Then he went upstairs to see his lord and lady, and kneeling before them he said,
"Because it was your Highness's pleasure, not because of any desert of my own, I went to govern your island of Barataria, which I entered naked, and naked I find myself. I neither lose nor gain. Whether I have governed well or ill, I have had witnesses who will say what they think fit. I have answered questions, I have decided causes, and always dying of hunger, for Dr. Pedro Recio of Tirteafuera, the island and governor-doctor, would have it so. Enemies attacked us by night, and put us in a great quandary, but the people of the island say they came off safe and victorious by the might of my arm. And may God give them as much health as there's truth in what they say. In short, during that time I have weighed the cares and responsibilities governing brings with it, and by my reckoning I find my shoulders can't bear them, nor are they a load for my loins or arrows for my quiver. And so, before the government threw me over, I preferred to throw the government over, and yesterday morning I left the island as I found it, with the same streets, houses, and roofs as it had when I entered it. I asked no loan of anybody, nor did I try to fill my pocket, and though I meant to make some useful laws, I made hardly any, as I was afraid they would not be kept. For in that case it comes to the same thing to make them or not to make them. I quitted the island, as I said, without any escort except my ass. I fell into a pit. I pushed on through it, until this morning by the light of the sun I saw an outlet, but not so easy a one but that, had not heaven sent me my master Don Quixote, I'd have stayed there till the end of the world. So now, my lord and lady, duke and duchess, here is your governor Sancho Panza, who, in the bare 10 days he has held the government, has come by the knowledge that he would not give anything to be governor, not to say of an island, but of the whole world. And that point being settled, kissing your worship's feet, and imitating the game of the boys when they say, "Leap thou and give me one," I take a leap out of the government, and pass into the service of my master Don Quixote. For after all, though in it I eat my bread in fear and trembling, at any rate I take my fill. And for my part, so long as I'm full, it's all alike to me whether it's with carrots or with partridges. Here Sancho brought his long speech to an end, Don Quixote having been the whole time in dread of his uttering a host of absurdities. And when he found him leave off with so few, he thanked heaven in his heart. The duke embraced Sancho, and told him he was heartily sorry he had given up the government so soon, but that he would see that he was provided with some other post on his estate, less onerous and more profitable. The duchess also embraced him, and gave orders that he should be taken good care of, as it was plain to see he had been badly treated, and worse bruised. Chapter 56 Of the prodigious and unparalleled battle that took place between Don Quixote of La Mancha and the lackey Tosilos in defence of the daughter of Doña Rodriguez. The duke and duchess had no reason to regret the joke that had been played upon Sancho Panza in giving him the government, especially as their majordomo returned the same day and gave them a minute account of almost every word and deed that Sancho uttered or did during the time, and to wind up with, eloquently described to them the attack upon the island and Sancho's fright and departure, with which they were not a little amused. After this, the history goes on to say that the day fixed for the battle arrived, and that the duke, after having repeatedly instructed his lackey Tosilos how to deal with Don Quixote so as to vanquish him without killing or wounding him, gave orders to have the heads removed from the lances, telling Don Quixote that Christian charity, on which he plumed himself, could not suffer the battle to be fought with so much risk and danger to life, and that he must be content with the offer of a battlefield on his territory, though that was against the decree of the Holy Council, which prohibits all challenges of the sort, and not push such an arduous venture to its extreme limits. Don Quixote bade his excellence arrange all matters connected with the affair as he pleased, as on his part he would obey him in everything. The dread day then having arrived, and the duke having ordered a spacious stand to be erected facing the court of the castle for the judges of the field and the appellant duennas, mother and daughter, vast crowds flocked from all the villages and hamlets of the neighbourhood to see the novel spectacle of the battle, nobody, dead or alive in those parts, having ever seen or heard of such a one. The first person to enter the field and the lists was the master of the ceremonies, who surveyed and paced the whole ground to see that there was nothing unfair and nothing concealed to make the combatant stumble or fall. Then the duennas entered and seated themselves, enveloped in mantles covering their eyes, nay, even their bosoms, and displaying no slight emotion as Don Quixote appeared in the lists. Shortly afterwards, accompanied by several trumpets and mounted on a powerful steed that threatened to crush the whole place, the great lackey Tosilos made his appearance on one side of the courtyard, with his visor down and stiffly cased in a suit of stout, shining armour. The horse was a manifest Frieslander, broad-backed and flea-bitten, and with half a hundred of wool hanging to each of his fetlocks. The gallant combatant came well primed by his master the duke, as to how he was to bear himself against the valiant Don Quixote of La Mancha, being warned that he must on no account slay him, but strive to shirk the first encounter so as to avoid the risk of killing him, as he was sure to do if he met him full tilt. He crossed the courtyard at a walk, and coming to where the duennas were placed, stopped to look at her who demanded him for a husband. The marshal of the field summoned Don Quixote, who had already presented himself in the courtyard, and standing by the side of Tosilos, he addressed the duennas, and asked them if they consented that Don Quixote of La Mancha should do battle for their right. They said they did, and that whatever he should do in that behalf, they declared rightly done, final, and valid.
By this time the Duke and Duchess had taken their places in a gallery commanding the enclosure, which was filled to overflowing with a multitude of people eager to see this perilous and unparalleled encounter. The conditions of the combat were that if Don Quixote proved the victor, his antagonist was to marry the daughter of Doña Rodriguez. But if he should be vanquished, his opponent was released from the promise that was claimed against him, and from all obligations to give satisfaction. The master of the ceremonies apportioned the sun equally to them, and stationed them each on the spot where he was to stand. The drums beat, the sound of the trumpets filled the air, the earth trembled underfoot. The hearts of the gazing crowd were full of anxiety, some hoping for a happy issue, some apprehensive of an untoward ending to the affair. And lastly, Don Quixote, commending himself with all his heart to God our Lord and to the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, stood waiting for them to give the necessary signal for the onset. Our lackey, however, was thinking of something very different. He only thought of what I am now going to mention. It seems that as he stood contemplating his enemy, she struck him as the most beautiful woman he had ever seen in all his life, and that the little blind boy whom in our streets they commonly call Love had no mind to let slip the chance of triumphing over a lackey heart and adding it to the list of his trophies. And so, stealing gently upon him unseen, he drove a dart 2 yards long into the poor lackey's left side and pierced his heart through and through, which he was able to do quite at his ease, for Love is invisible, and comes in and goes out as he likes, without anyone calling him to account for what he does. Well then, when they gave the signal for the onset, our lackey was in an ecstasy, musing upon the beauty of her whom he had already made mistress of his liberty. And so he paid no attention to the sound of the trumpet, unlike Don Quixote, who was off the instant he heard it, and at the highest speed Rocinante was capable of, set out to meet his enemy, his good squire Sancho shouting lustily as he saw him start, "God guide thee, cream and flower of knights errant! God give thee victory, for thou hast the right on thy side!" But though Tosilos saw Don Quixote coming at him, he never stirred a step from the spot where he was posted, and instead of doing so, called loudly to the marshal of the field, to whom, when he came up to see what he wanted, he said, "Señor, is not this battle to decide whether I marry or do not marry that lady?"
"Just so," was the answer.
"Well then," said the lackey, "I feel qualms of conscience, and I should lay a heavy burden upon it if I were to proceed any further with the combat. I therefore declare that I yield myself vanquished and that I am willing to marry the lady at once." The marshal of the field was lost in astonishment at the words of Tosilos, and as he was one of those who were privy to the arrangement of the affair, he knew not what to say in reply. Don Quixote pulled up in mid-career when he saw that his enemy was not coming on to the attack. The duke could not make out the reason why the battle did not go on, but the marshal of the field hastened to him to let him know what Tosilos said, and he was amazed and extremely angry at it. In the meantime, Tosilos advanced to where Doña Rodriguez sat and said in a loud voice, "Señora, I am willing to marry your daughter, and I have no wish to obtain by strife and fighting what I can obtain in peace and without any risk to my life." The valiant Don Quixote heard him and said,
"As that is the case, I am released and absolved from my promise. Let them marry by all means, and as God our Lord has given her, may Saint Peter add his blessing."
The duke had now descended to the courtyard of the castle, and going up to Tosilos, he said to him, "Is it true, Sir Knight, that you yield yourself vanquished, and that, moved by scruples of conscience, you wish to marry this damsel?"
"It is, señor," replied Tosilos.
"And he does well," said Sancho, "for what thou hast to give to the mouse, give to the cat, and it will save thee all trouble."
Tosilos, meanwhile, was trying to unlace his helmet, and he begged them to come to his help at once, as his power of breathing was failing him, and he could not remain so long shut up in that confined space. They removed it in all haste, and his lackey features were revealed to public gaze. At this sight, Doña Rodriguez and her daughter raised a mighty outcry, exclaiming,
"This is a trick! This is a trick! They have put Tosilos, my lord the duke's lackey, upon us, in place of the real husband! The justice of God and the king against such trickery, not to say roguery!"
"Do not distress yourselves, ladies," said Don Quixote, "for this is no trickery or roguery. Or if it is not the duke who is at the bottom of it, but those wicked enchanters who persecute me, and who, jealous of my reaping the glory of this victory, have turned your husband's features into those of this person, who you say is a lackey of the duke's. Take my advice, and notwithstanding the malice of my enemies, marry him,
for beyond a doubt he is the one you wish for a husband."
When the Duke heard this, all his anger was near vanishing in a fit of laughter, and he said, "The things that happened to Señor Don Quixote are so extraordinary that I am ready to believe this lackey of mine is not one. But let us adopt this plan and device. Let us put off the marriage for, say, a fortnight, and let us keep this person about whom we are uncertain in close confinement, and perhaps in the course of that time he may return to his original shape. For the spite which the enchanters entertain against Señor Don Quixote cannot last so long, especially as it is of so little advantage to them to practice these deceptions and transformations."
"Oh, Señor," said Sancho, "those scoundrels are well used to changing whatever concerns my master from one thing into another. A knight that he overcame some time back, called the Knight of the Mirrors, they turned into the shape of the bachelor Samson Carrasco of our town, and a great friend of ours. And my lady Dulcinea del Toboso they have turned into a common country wench. So I suspect this lackey will have to live and die a lackey all the days of his life."
Here the Rodriguez's daughter exclaimed, "Let him be who he may, this man that claims me for a wife. I am thankful to him for the same, for I had rather be the lawful wife of a lackey than the cheated mistress of a gentleman, though he who played me false is nothing of the kind."
To be brief, all the talk and all that had happened ended in Tosilos being shut up until it was seen how his transformation turned out. All hailed Don Quixote as victor, but the greater number were vexed and disappointed at finding that the combatants they had been so anxiously waiting for had not battered one another to pieces, just as the boys are disappointed when the man they are waiting to see hanged does not come out, because the prosecution or the court has pardoned him. The people dispersed, the Duke and Don Quixote returned to the castle. They locked up Tosilos. Doña Rodriguez and her daughter remained perfectly contented when they saw that anyway the affair must end in marriage, and Tosilos wanted nothing else. Chapter 57, which treats of how Don Quixote took leave of the Duke, and of what followed with the witty and impudent Altisidora, one of the Duchess's damsels. Don Quixote now felt it right to quit a life of such idleness as he was leading in the castle, for he fancied that he was making himself sorely missed by suffering himself to remain shut up and inactive amid the countless luxuries and enjoyments his hosts lavished upon him as a knight. And he felt, too, that he would have to render a strict account to heaven of that indolence and seclusion. And so one day he asked the Duke and Duchess to grant him permission to take his departure. They gave it, showing at the same time that they were very sorry he was leaving them. The Duchess gave his wife's letters to Sancho Panza, who shed tears over them, saying, "Who would have thought that such grand hopes as the news of my government bred in my wife Teresa Panza's breast would end in my going back now to the vagabond adventures of my master Don Quixote of La Mancha? Still, I'm glad to see my Teresa behaved as she ought in sending the acorns, for if she had not sent them I'd have been sorry, and she'd have shown herself ungrateful. It is a comfort to me that they can't call that present a bribe, for I had got the government already when she sent them, and it's but reasonable that those who have had a good turn done them should show their gratitude, if it's only with a trifle. After all, I went into the government naked, and I come out of it naked, so I can say with a safe conscience, and that's no small matter, naked I was born, naked I find myself, I neither lose nor gain." Thus did Sancho soliloquize on the day of their departure, as Don Quixote, who had the night before taken leave of the Duke and Duchess, coming out made his appearance at an early hour in full armour in the courtyard of the castle. The whole household of the castle were watching him from the corridors, and the Duke and Duchess, too, came out to see him. Sancho was mounted on his Dapple, with his saddle-bags and valise, supremely happy because the Duke's majordomo, the same that had acted the part of the Trifaldi, had given him a little purse with 200 gold crowns to meet the necessary expenses of the road. But of this Don Quixote knew nothing as yet. While all were, as has been said, observing him, suddenly from among the duennas and handmaidens the impudent and witty Altisidora lifted up her voice and said in pathetic tones, "Give ear, cruel knight, draw rein. Where's the need of spurring the flanks of that ill-broken steed? From what art thou flying? No dragon I am, not even a sheep, but a tender young lamb. Thou hast jilted a maiden as fair to behold as nymph of Diana or Venus of old. Birenio, Aeneas, what worse shall I call thee? Barabbas go with thee, all evil befall thee. In thy claws, ruthless robber, thou bearest away the heart of a meek-loving maid for thy prey.
Three kerchiefs thou stealest, and garters a pair from legs than the whitest of marble more fair. And the sighs that pursue thee would burn to the ground 2,000 Troy towns, if so many were found. Bileno Aeneas, what worse shall I call thee? Barabbas go with thee, all evil befall thee. May no bowels of mercy to Sancho be granted, and thy Dulcinea be left still enchanted. May thy falsehood to me find its punishment in her, for in my land the just often pays for the sinner. May thy grandest adventures discomfitures prove. May thy joys be all dreams, and forgotten thy love. Bireno, Aeneas, what worse shall I call thee? Barabbas go with thee, all evil befall thee. May thy name be abhorred for thy conduct to ladies, from London to England, from Seville to Cadiz. May thy cards be unlucky, thy hands contain ne'er a king, seven or ace, when thou playest primera. When thy corns are cut, may it be to the quick. When thy grinders are drawn, may the roots of them stick. Bireno Aeneas, what worse shall I call thee? Barabbas go with thee, all evil befall thee. All the while the unhappy Altisidora was bewailing herself in the above strain, Don Quixote stood staring at her. And without uttering a word in reply to her, he turned round to Sancho and said, "Sancho, my friend, I conjure thee by the life of thy forefathers, tell me the truth. Say, hast thou by any chance taken the three kerchiefs and the garters this lovesick maid speaks of?" To this Sancho made answer, "The three kerchiefs I have, but the garters as much as over the hills of Úbeda." The duchess was amazed at Altisidora's assurance. She knew that she was bold, lively, and impudent, but not so much as to venture to make free in this fashion, and not being prepared for the joke, her astonishment was all the greater. The duke had a mind to keep up the sport, so he said, "It does not seem to me well done in you, Sir Knight, that after having received the hospitality that has been offered you in this very castle, you should have ventured to carry off even three kerchiefs, not to say my handmaid's garters. It shows a bad heart, and does not tally with your reputation. Restore her garters, or else I defy you to mortal combat, for I am not afraid of rascally enchanters changing or altering my features, as they changed his who encountered you into those of my lackey Tosilos." "God forbid," said Don Quixote, "that I should draw my sword against your illustrious person, from which I have received such great favours. The kerchiefs I will restore, as Sancho says he has them. As to the garters, that is impossible, for I have not got them, neither has he. And if your handmaiden here will look in her hiding-places, depend upon it she will find them. I have never been a thief, my lord duke, nor do I mean to be so long as I live, if God cease not to have me in his keeping. This damsel by her own confession speaks as one in love, for which I am not to blame, and therefore need not ask pardon, either of her or of your excellence, whom I entreat to have a better opinion of me, and once more to give me leave to pursue my journey."
"And may God so prosper it, Señor Don Quixote," said the duchess, "that we may always hear good news of your exploits. God speed you, for the longer you stay, the more you inflame the hearts of the damsels who behold you. And as for this one of mine, I will so chastise her that she will not transgress again, either with her eyes or with her words."
"One word, and no more, O valiant Don Quixote, I ask you to hear," said Altisidora, "and that is that I beg your pardon about the theft of the garters, for by God and upon my soul I have got them on, and I have fallen into the same blunder as he who went looking for his ass, being all the while mounted on it."
"Didn't I say so?" said Sancho. "I'm a likely one to hide thefts. Why, if I wanted to deal in them, opportunities came ready enough to me and my government."
Don Quixote bowed his head and saluted the duke and duchess and all the bystanders, and wheeling Rocinante round, Sancho following him on Dapple, he rode out of the castle, shaping his course for Saragossa. Chapter 58, which tells how adventures came crowding on Don Quixote in such numbers that they gave one another no breathing time. When Don Quixote saw himself in open country, free and relieved from the attentions of Altisidora, he felt at his ease, and in fresh spirits to take up the pursuit of chivalry once more. And turning to Sancho, he said, "Freedom, Sancho, is one of the most precious gifts that heaven has bestowed upon men. No treasures that the earth holds buried or the sea conceals can compare with it. For freedom, as for honour, life may and should be ventured, and on the other hand, captivity is the greatest evil that can fall to the lot of man.
I say this, Sancho, because thou hast seen the good cheer, the abundance we have enjoyed in this castle we are leaving.
Well, then, amid those dainty banquets and snow-cooled beverages, I felt as though I were undergoing the straits of